You may or may not know that this month has been nominated as Autism Month. And in order to respect that, we have invited into studio Carmen LaRusso, a specialist in autism, to speak to us for the next 5-10 minutes about autism and maybe dispel some myths. Carmen, thank you so much for taking the time to come and speak to us here on 101.9 Chai FM. I'm going to put my cards way out on the table and tell you I know nothing about autism, and I think a vast majority of people don't know about autism.
That's actually fantastic news. There's so much to tell about autism, and there's so much hope to give about autism that I'm thrilled that you know next to nothing, so we can actually educate more of your listeners as well.
So I had this really interesting article that was provided to me, and it's called Debunking Myths. And I'd really like to address a couple of the issues raised in this article because it's just absolutely fascinating. So myth number one, autism is a mental illness.
That's true. Autism does not actually qualify as a mental illness. Rather, there's a lot of comorbid disorders such as anxiety, depression, and OCD that do co-occur with autism. But in itself, autism is not a mental condition. Rather, it is a disorder that's produced by gastrointestinal issues, seizures, and neurological conditions that then result in arrested development, which results in the child failing to develop certain pivotal skills for living independently.
You've got to be kidding me. You said gastrointestinal.
Yes, there's been a lot of research on the gut-brain link, showing that there's a definite link to gastrointestinal disorders and issues resulting in some of the symptoms and behavioral symptoms specifically that we see with autism.
So, Carmen, what does this actually mean? What is the import of that? That if you catch the symptom early enough, you can possibly do something about it?
Absolutely. Early intervention is critical in treating autism. So a lot of the kids that we see do have gastrointestinal issues, and a lot of parents are now more aware and are treating much earlier on. The U.S. Surgeon General has stated that between the ages of 0 and 36 months is actually the critical period for treating autism effectively and helping that child reach recovery.
That is absolutely fascinating to me. So the next list on my questions was that there is no cure. You're actually debunking that, saying, well, no, it's treatable.
Absolutely. There's actually two key treatments in managing and treating autism effectively. The first is biomedical intervention, so addressing the food sensitivities, the allergies, and any environmental pathogens present for the child, and then also applied behavioral analytical theory. And in practice, what that means is that teaching the child the skills that they need to in the way that they learn in order to help them gain those skills to live their best independent life.
This is a real weird and wacky question, but something I really want to ask. If I was an autistic kid, how would I be experiencing the world? If you can even endeavor to answer a question like that, what makes me different? What's different for me?
I think the most important thing in answering your question first is to realize that autism is a spectrum of symptoms. So no two individuals with autism will present the same way. There are, however, overlapping symptoms that most individuals with autism will experience. And the first one is social communication. And what that essentially entails is that your ability to A, either develop language, or B, use the language that you've developed in a way that helps you connect with other people in a meaningful manner. So, for example, a lot of individuals with autism spectrum disorder fail to make eye contact, and that automatically to a neurotypical person is an indication that they're not interested in me. Whereas for the child with autism, that just means that they are uncomfortable with certain aspects of making eye contact. Another symptom that is quite prevalent within the autism spectrum community is sensory difficulties. So some children are understimulated and are sensory seeking. So, for example, you might see them engage in hand flapping to gain extra sensory stimulation from their environment, whereas another child would actually be hypersensitive and may try to avoid certain sensory stimuli, such as covering their ears, squinting at bright lights, and those kinds of things. So the world is really scary for a child with autism. And now, taking into account that many of them don't develop the language skills in order to be able to express themselves and express what they're experiencing, we do see some of these problem behaviors that are often attributed to autism spectrum disorder, such as the screaming, because they can't express exactly how scary and how attacking the world seems to them.
Do they learn that with time as they grow older? Do they learn coping mechanisms as to how to function in a normative world?
So again, autism is a spectrum of symptoms. Yeah. So some individuals may independently develop those skills, whereas the vast majority of individuals with autism spectrum do need therapy and guidance in how to manage those symptoms effectively.
So, Carmen, I was just thinking to my own life. I'm like pretty much a very middle-aged person. I've lived my life and I've seen nobody with autism anywhere, not in a job place, not in a school, not, where are they and what kind of numbers, what are their number? What percentage of the population suffers from it?
I think to answer the first part of your question, we need to take into account the lack of education in South Africa on autism. So many of these individuals are put into institutions. Many of them are hidden away from society purely because the family is doesn't have the education or the knowledge on how to effectively manage these individuals and help them reach their independence. The second part of your question, sorry, if you could just repeat that for me.
Oh my goodness me, it's gone out of my head too. Excepting, never mind, because I was interested as well, the effect, I mean, sure, the person who's got autism must suffer all sorts of social stigmas, etc., but the effect on the family must be significant as well. I mean, this must have huge unforeseen consequences on family life, on parents' relationships, on the family in general. Do you find that? Is that a common sort of effect?
Absolutely. This is a very scary diagnosis to receive, and especially because the information is lacking in a lot of the situations. So for many of the families, I think the most significant impact on them is their sleep. Many children with autism spectrum disorders have a hard time falling asleep or staying asleep. The second part is the behavioral challenges that these families face. You know, because these children don't effectively communicate what they need, we see a lot of challenging behaviors, and managing that and still trying to keep your sanity is really hard. But at the Star Academy, our message is one of hope. With the right treatment, with the right intervention, there's no need to continue to suffer. With the right intervention and the right team behind you, the quality of life, not only for the child can improve, but the entire family as well.
Carmen, this is fascinating stuff. We want to come back to you, but I want to take a music break. And in studio with us, we are speaking to Carmen LaRusso. She's a specialist in autism. This is Autism Month, and in respect for that, we are discussing what is autism. What can one do to assist people with autism? Just getting a better understanding of the subject. Thank you for staying with us. And thank you, Alon, for reminding me what my question was. I had a bit of a brain moment there. I was asking you about the numbers of population who suffer with autism. I understand you say it's a spectrum, so it's a difficult diagnosis. I would imagine the undiagnosed people as well.
Absolutely. To date, in South Africa, we don't have a firm figure on autism spectrum prevalence. However, the Center for Autism Research Africa estimates us at 1%. However, the global benchmark for autism prevalence is the US figure, which is currently at 1 in 59 individuals, which 1 in 4 are boys.
Why would it affect boys? I mean, if it's gastrointestinal, then what on earth would this have to do with your gender?
There is a large genetic component in the cause and etiology of autism. So the way we view it at the Star Academy is your genetics present as a loaded gun. And anything in the environment which does affect your gastrointestinal tract can actually trigger that gun and then result in the disorder developing.
So diet? Is diet in any way important?
Yes. A dietary intervention is actually one of the big components of the biomedical intervention. So if a child presents with certain food sensitivities, this causes inflammation in the body, and that's where we start seeing that gut-brain connection.
Wow, this is just so unbelievably, you've like opened a whole sphere that I knew nothing about. It's just so fascinating. Talk to me about the Star Academy. Who are you? What are you? What do you do?
So the Star Academy is an organization that specializes in the delivering of applied behavior analysis, which is essentially a program designed to fit the individual's specific strengths and weaknesses in order then to help them develop the skills that they need in order to be as independent as they can be. We started about 10 years ago, and our director, Ilana Gershlevitz, actually went and sought that that skill from the United States when her own son was diagnosed at the age of 22 months.
Wow, man, this is just absolutely incredible. How did you get involved with this?
So I was a student at the University of Pretoria and thinking about my future in psychology. And one evening into my honors class walks Ilana and her son. And it was passion at first sight.
Really?
The field of autism is vast. There's so much to learn. There's so much to do. And I think the most important is that there's so many kids to help right now.
Carmen, we're going to continue with this discussion in a short while, but we are almost, in fact, we're not almost, we are exactly at 5 o'clock, which means we are going to hear the latest news with Sasha Starr. But yeah, as I said, in studio, we have Carmen LaRusso, and we are talking all things autism. Carmen, we've had a question from a listener who writes as follows. It says, it's unsigned, but it says, my cousin is autistic and doesn't like to wear his clothes. Do autistic children not like textures?
So again, just coming back to the fact that it is a spectrum of disorders, and there are definitely some individuals who have what we call tactile defensiveness, and that's where the sensory system doesn't process the tactile information the same way that we neurotypically developing children or as neurotypically or neurotypical adults do. So for those individuals who do have tactile defensiveness, the feeling of certain textures can be really uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable. Isn't that interesting? To what extent are we inclusive as a society? To what extent do people suffering from autism, to what extent are they accepted or rejected or bullied? Or
that's quite a difficult question. I think it's quite a dark number in terms of how inclusive the community is as a whole in South Africa. I do know that there has been a lot of legislation in terms of making schools more inclusive. However, that hasn't really come to fruition as well as it could as yet, but the government has made a serious commitment to including more individuals with autism. In terms of the wider community, though, with the increase in awareness, many more people are aware and can accommodate these individuals in a more compassionate manner throughout the society as well.
So getting back to the myths, and you touched on education, myth number 4, people with autism should be put in special needs schools. What do you have to say about that?
I think it definitely depends on the individual strengths and weaknesses of that child. We at the Star Academy do prefer an individualized approach. The generic treatment programs available in special schools don't really cover that individual strengths and weaknesses, where with an individualized program, we can really get to the heart of what this student can do really well and how we can use those strengths to teach them the skills that they're not so adept with.
Myth number 6, because I'm quite aware of time, so I'm going to pull up the ones that just jump out at me. Myth number 6, children with autism cannot form connections with others. I mean, that must be hugely isolating.
Absolutely, and that's part of the silence of the world of autism. The children on the autism spectrum don't necessarily perceive the subtleties of body language, but that does not mean that they don't have the ability to form meaningful relationships with others. In order to help them develop these relationships, we do work on teaching them how to read these cues, how to respond to these cues, and possibly the causes and effects of these cues in order to help them become more aware. And once they understand these parameters, it really facilitates an understanding of responses from the children on the spectrum side as well as the others in their environment as well.
We spent quite a bit of time talking about children with autism. Adults with autism? I'm just thinking, you know, can you live a normal life? Can you get married? Can you have a family? Can you function in a living? I mean, it's difficult because you've said very clearly it's a spectrum, but those on the beginning of the spectrum.
So on the beginning of the spectrum, many of them do need assistance in their day-to-day lives. Some of them can function with a degree of independence depending on their skill sets. But the majority of those individuals who do need a lot of assistance most likely will need lifelong support. However, at the Star Academy, our focus is on teaching these individuals how to live as independently as possible. And more recently, we've started working with some adults, although this type of intervention with the Star Academy is still in its infancy.
Carmen, time has gone 10 past. That's unfortunately where we're going to leave it. But I want to thank you. Thank you for taking the time to come in and talk to us. It's always great to eyeball somebody. It's just that much better than Skype.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you for doing your bit to raise awareness about an issue that I think many, many, many of us